Ladies and gentlemen, another episode of Mixed Mental Arts with three women, two men, and the men are going to do their best to try to keep quiet here because we're going to talk about sexism. We're already in a heated debate, but we can just start with the first of all. The elephant in the room is that we have three white women here, probably college educated, and probably of if you look at it globally, of an upper level socioeconomic status, which is the only way I would have it. Now, if you hear barking in the back, it's my puppy fighting with my police dog, both of them hopeless watchdogs. One's a male and one's a female. The male's the one's making all the noise.
Sounds
Kate Fogarty.
Hello.
We have Katie O'Brien.
Hello.
We have Claire.
Garrity Mott.
That's right.
Yeah.
Garrity, what is the last name?
Garrity Mott.
Claire Garrity Mott. And Hunter Mott, of course, and they call me the kid. So this is a broad topic, sexism, right?
Yes. A broad topic?
Yeah.
Is that on purpose?
Well, it's certainly a charged. It's certainly a charged topic.
Do you call it a broad?
And maybe I'll start. Maybe I'll start and leave it, and I'll throw this piece of meat out there. And I just want to say it. I think that we've made a lot of progress, and I think it's been forced on men. And I think being a man in today's workplace is very dicey and maybe even dangerous. And I hear a lot of women complain that men aren't men anymore. So what do you guys think?
So you feel like you're being attacked.
Me less so. I'm a little older, but
you
also don't have a normal
workplace.
Feel
like the males mm-hmm. of the society are being attacked right now by the females of society.
No, I think that men are probably have to be very careful expressing how they actually feel. So men have to be very careful about maybe expressing the fact that they don't feel sensitive. That they don't really care about the things that they are supposed to care about, that communication isn't something that comes natural to them. And in fact, they don't really want to talk a lot. There are a lot of things like that.
Oh
and by the way, and one more thing, men also are very much afraid to express themselves sexually. I mean, I know that we live in a time when the president says, I'm going to grab your pussy and stuff.
Yes.
Right? So, and we can talk about that. But I think for the most part, men, young men especially, are very careful now. They're very careful.
I want to say I just have a really hard time identifying because as a female growing up, I was never taught to be careful about how I expressed myself or what I thought or how I expressed mm-hmm, my sexual mm-hmm. desires or image.
She's
or
being sarcastic.
Any of these
yes,
things,
yes.
Brian.
Yes.
I'm just welcome. Learning so much about having to check yourself for social reasons.
I love
welcome
it.
Welcome to
God.
The party, Brian.
I love what you're saying.
Welcome to our side of the street.
Good.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. And I
no,
you're
weird.
Absolutely right. And,
yeah.
And it goes on to this day. You guys have to be very careful. And
I will say I am appreciative to not have my only career option be churning butter anymore. That being said, I think there's still progress to be made.
Yeah, especially all over the world, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Hmm. Yeah, keep going with that thought. That's interesting. That's a good point. You guys have to always... I remember my sister would be sitting in a certain way and my mother would say, it's not very ladylike. You have to be careful about a lot of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, from both sides too, from male and female. Like, I get it just as much from other women,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. saying, you know, such a short skirt. And
yeah.
it's like, okay, thanks.
You're
yeah.
like, this is what was clean. Get off my back.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, but, sorry.
No, go ahead.
See a woman, always apologizing.
Yeah.
No, I've heard that sentiment for men, that especially white men, feel like it's the worst situation right now to be a white man. And I just re-listened to, I know you're laughing.
I just re-listened. Hunter, you traitor.
Well, I just re-listened to the Jordan Peterson podcast that you guys had. And I think that his focus seems to be mostly PC culture in universities. And I think he has a lot of great points. There were a lot of times where I was having feelings about what you guys were saying during that podcast, which is why I think I emailed Hunter and was just like, hold on a second. Like, so this whole idea, exactly what Katie was saying, this whole idea that you guys feel uncertain about what you can say, things like that. We've lived that for years and years. I mean,
centuries.
Yeah, sorry, centuries, yes. Millennia. Yeah. And so.
So of gay men, by the way. So of, yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's not a contest to see who's had it worst. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that at all. But at the same time, it's like, okay, now you're in a position to feel how we feel. So let's come together and be like, okay, now we can both have empathy and figure this out instead of just like, oh no, I'm going to say things like we should repeal the 19th Amendment or, we should grab their pussies or whatever it is. Like,
right,
it's just
right. The retaliation. Like, you don't have to. The pendulum is just finding a balance here. It's not that we are now attacking you. We're not attacking you. I love men personally. But it, you know, it's a recognition. It's a certain level of, oh shit, we've been doing this to them for a long time. And putting them in their place, or, you know, having dominion over them, or thinking of them as other, like what you just said, that we are aliens. We're not aliens. We're just people. Like, you are a person and you are a person, and we're just people with brains in our heads.
For me, it comes down to, I never thought of myself as a feminist, but I believe in fair play, like I was talking before, and a meritocracy.
Well, by the way, then you are a feminist.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all it's about. I think feminism has gotten a
Brian
dirty connotation.
Brian Callen is a feminist. No, it's now on record, Brian. Yeah. The world knows.
But I've always been that way. Feminism has gotten this, like, dirty connotation over time, and as with any group that, you know, advances at any moment in history, there are the sort of loudest, squeakiest wheels. And often they, you know, that is who people latch on to and decide is, like, you know, this, like, too aggressive, too harsh version of what it is. But in reality, it's really just people saying, hey, like, I can also do that job. I can also
whatever. So as a father of a daughter who's 9.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of these thoughts because my daughter is focused. Her tennis and her ability to focus I've never seen anything like it. And she's more competitive. She's like her mother. I'm not a competitive person. She's competitive on a level where she could be an outstanding tennis player. She could also be an outstanding horseback rider, right? So I'm watching, she gets straight A's, but I'm watching this girl. But I'm watching this girl who is as hungry to win and as hungry to accomplish and is as interested in everything as anybody I've ever seen, male or female, right? And so, you know, obviously as somebody who's a father, and I thought about this, I thought, man, she could have been born so many other places today, and she would not even be granted an education. She certainly wouldn't be taken seriously, and she certainly wouldn't have a lot of opportunities.
That's right.
Like, even in Russia and places like that, which is pretty macho. I don't know enough about Russian culture today, but I've heard a lot of this stuff, women talking about how tough it is. But so I think that most men, even guys who I guess would be considered insensitive or chauvinistic or whatever, when they have a daughter, things start to change. And I think the debate or the discussion should be, maybe how do we get to a point where more kids like my daughter have an ability to express themselves, explore the world, and accomplish things. I think that's really where we get into it. Because what I worry about is, going back to what I meant by it's a dangerous place to be a man, what I worry about is sometimes this problem can be broken into good guys and bad guys, into predator prey, into dominant dominated. And that may be true to an extent. You can certainly make that case for male-female dynamics in a lot of countries, maybe even in this country in certain cases. And I don't know what it's like to be a woman and deal with that shit. But what do you guys think is the best way to fight that? Because because what I see a lot of times is this, there's a lot of public shaming and there's a lot of sort of coercive, and I don't know the word for it, but there seems to be a better way than to just sort of bully up on this idea of toxic masculinity and these things that you hear a lot of times. And maybe I'm overly sensitive to this, but I guess we should talk about, in a long way, what do you think is the best way to kind of even this playing field?
Well, I think that the just by looking at people as people is the, and as individuals is not whatever label you have. Like, I have breasts. Okay, great. So I am a woman, but you don't have to recognize that as the first thing you see.
But well, can I ask you, can I stop you there?
Yes.
That is, you're a very attractive
woman. That is
the
first thing Brian sees.
Yeah, you are. You're a really good looking woman. So the first time I ever saw you, I was like, geez, you know. And as a man, and when you walked in here today, I went, Claire's just a, you know, and I flirt with you. And I, so that's really strong for men, like, right?
Right.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but I
no,
think
and
there's
it's the same for me if I see a good looking guy.
But there's a difference between having that be your first reaction to yourself, completely fine, normal, natural, whatever, and then using that to make an assumption about someone's abilities before you've actually seen them prove their merit.
Yes.
I think that's all anyone's asking. It's not that the majority of women who would call themselves feminists or are, you know, pushing for this equality, particularly in the workplace, are in any way trying to pretend biology doesn't exist or that we look different with our pants off or anything. Like, we're not pretending any of that isn't true. It's that I personally, many women that I know, all of whom are, you know, college educated and have done everything, you know, necessary to prove themselves as intelligent, capable human beings, have had plenty of scenarios in which that sort of femininity and therefore lesser ability was presupposed.
So don't you guys think that's the ball is moving in the right direction for all that?
I don't know anybody who would disagree.
Really? I feel like it did. I feel like it was. And I feel like that this is sort of this backlash effect of, you know, the right wing just sort of making a final, you know, sort of grab of a pussy. Like, I honestly think that because it has been it has been pretty progressive and moving forward. And then suddenly, what you were saying about masculine toxicity just like sort of reasserted itself. And, you know, they're not letting Elizabeth Warren speak. And you're like, okay, what? No, she's an elected senator. You let her have the floor. So I think that there is this fear from men that they are now being attacked by, you know, women, which isn't true. We're just not attacking men. We're just assuming the roles that we want and being powerful in the workplace.
I mostly agree with that. I would say that there are women attacking men and there's women attacking women. And I think that to your point or to your question about whether it's getting better, I think our country as a whole is getting more and more divisive about everything, about politics, about gender issues, racial issues. And I think it's because, I mean, I don't know why necessarily, but I think part of it is that the Dunbar number, we're getting more and more people and we're getting more isolated in our technology use and things like that.
So you can find your own community online, in other words.
Yeah,
your own
echo chamber. And it feels good to just get your confirmation bias again and again and again. I mean, I love it. And so I would say, how do we change this? Like I said to Hunter last time when we were talking, I don't think we're looking for a cure. I don't think a cure is possible. I think we want a balance. And
or at least like what Claire was saying, awareness, right?
Yeah. And so just like they do with like that racial bias test where you take the test and it's like, oh, my God, I have racial bias, even though I thought I was liberal and non-racist, recognizing that we all have gender bias. Women, there was a study done with scientists about just like getting information, a man's name and a woman's name and who would get more money for their research group. And across the board, men got something like 6% more, even when women were doing the hiring. So it's not just men. We all have this bias. Society and culture is this matrix that we all just permeate or like live in. And so we have to do what Jonathan Haidt says and think of where are the moral intuitions that someone else is coming from. So instead of just attacking someone and like, gender wage gap doesn't exist, or that's not true, or you're just a feminazi, or you're just an evil white male, or whatever it is, we have to start to listen to the emotions and the feelings behind everything, and then we can start to have a discussion.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying also is that the danger of people creating their own echo chambers is that they forget things, like, for example, Alex Jones and these people. when you call your enemy a pedophile, or they're all in pedophile rings or whatever, what you're forgetting is that you need to persuade. The whole point should be that you should, first of all, agree on what are you trying to accomplish. We all here want a meritocracy. I think we all believe in fair play, right? We all know that. So the idea then would be, how do I persuade the side I don't agree with at least to come over to a little bit to my side, or at least let's get it, shouldn't that be the goal?
Well, I think part of what Kate is talking about, and a lot of what we've been talking about here in Mixed Mental Arts, is a shared frame of reference. As Claire said, we're all people. And as soon as you're in the person category, the human being category, there are certain things that you're dealing with. You're dealing with the fact that you are socially intelligent, right? That is your superpower. You're dealing with this Dunbar number. So most people are a mystery to you, and just sort of you put them in some sort of broad category. You're dealing with fast and slow thinking. And you're dealing with the Descartes' error. You're dealing with the fact that your emotions are always driving your thinking. And if we were starting any of these conversations from that shared frame of reference, where we understand that we have a problem, and the problem is naive realism. The problem is that we think that we see the world as it is, but none of us actually do. And so if we want to actually unpick these problems, then we have to start to operate. And the way that I've been starting to make sense in talking to the ladies and hearing them, really, in many senses, for the first time in my life, is to think of this like the Toyota production system, where everybody has a different role and has different knowledge and different understanding. So it would be ridiculous, you know, you may be the CEO of Toyota, but you don't know what it's like to put wheels on the car. And it would be ridiculous for me to come down and say, this is what the experience of being a woman is like, because I literally have no idea. That's not my job, and I don't know that. And if I want a better meritocracy, then it's a large part of it is just even hearing. And I know that from Katie, for example, I've heard stories about being a female director and what it's like trying to navigate that system, where there are a lot of this is that a lot of fast thinking takes over, and there are reflexive decisions that are made about who is hired that have nothing to do with merit and just have to do with assumptions about who is a director and who is not a director.
Yeah, I had an experience where raising my kids again, you kind of have to face a lot of your own shortcomings, because my wife and I were on the wrong page in raising kids, right? You'll find that your culture and your point of view on the world really clashes when you're trying to raise two human beings. And this woman who's an occupational therapist that my son goes to, and I had a problem with that too. I'm like, put him in sports, it's bullshit. And my this is my parenting. Yeah. This is all instinct. Did I read one book? No. But my instinct is this: the world's a kick in the nuts. I gotta raise my kids like little soldiers. I'm not that way, but of course in my mind I gotta be a man and all this bullshit. I gotta be traditional male. I gotta be loud and give them a piece of the real world, and it's okay to be irritable, and it's okay to be generally forceful. Okay. And of course my wife, who's been reading the books on child psychology and has a much better understanding of what makes my children tick because she's with them all the time, is looking at me like, you just don't get it. So long story short, I go and I have this meeting with this woman she's 70. She's been doing this from day one. She's written three books, one of which I've read recently, about how to communicate with a child and how important it is for two parents to be on the same side. Now, when you have a lot of male energy on one side, which might be me, and a lot of female energy on the other side, which might be my wife, you've got to confront, you've got to solve a problem, right? And what was very helpful for both of us is both of us said, look, we just want to win. We just want our kids to be the best here. So what's the most effective grip on my tennis racket that's going to get the most spin on the goddamn ball? I don't care if it feels uncomfortable. What matters is, what techniques do I have to use? And all of the techniques I've been trying to use now buck against my emotions, buck against my instincts, buck against my fragile notion of what a man is. It's hilarious. And I don't know if I could have done it if I wasn't 50. You know?
But also,
I'm sorry, I didn't know if that made any sense to
no,
if
definitely. That was a good piggyback. What you're describing thing, is, first of all, you're right. Like, it doesn't matter what it took to change your grip as long as your shots are winners now, mm-hmm. right? That's all that matters in the end. Mm-hmm. And all that you're describing in that entire process is all that we need worldwide now on both sides of literally every argument that exists.
But right maybe and because left. Maybe
it's
we
just
should
recognizing we all want the same thing, which is a functional society, a meritocracy, some sort of equality, whatever these things are. And then saying, I'm going to be uncomfortable, you're going to be uncomfortable, I will hate a lot of this, you will hate a lot of this, but I'm going to try my best to recognize what you bring to the table that I can't bring, and vice versa. And in the end, if it freaking works, who cares?
Yeah, I think that's how it has to be framed to people whose side you want. Like, I always try to talk to people. My father would always say this about Japan. My father would say, Japan's a very chauvinistic society, and therefore they're not going to win. And people would, I remember this in the 80s, and people were like, you're out of your mind. He said, well, they're wasting half their population.
That's right, yeah.
And if you frame it that way, if you look at Russia, who's very into masculine power, sort of on a horse with my shirt off, that's awesome, dude. But you guys.
Great photo op.
You don't even fucking make good guns. I've never bought anything made by, and they're amazing people, and think about what they could offer. But because of that kind of, there's that sort of myopic view of what strength is, it's so self-defeating, and in fact it just makes you much weaker.
Well, right. We know that altruistic societies do better, or groups do better, than selfish.
Well, we
groups.
Do because we've read that book by David Sloan Wilson, but the problem is,
I haven't actually read it, but yeah, I listened to the podcast.
But the problem is none of us freaking, the problem is we've got to frame these things to, so I always say, if you want the Second Amendment guys on your side with the Trump thing, because, you know, people always talk about sort of the right wing and stuff, the forefront of the feminist movement in a lot of ways is in mixed martial arts, in the UFC. These women, have you seen any of these fights? I'm telling you, as a lifelong fight fan, I look forward just as much toward the watching the women fight. Some of whom I'm telling you, from a technical aspect, are as good technically striking and in jiu-jitsu as any man. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, it's a weird name, but she's from Poland, is a killer. Yeah. So it goes on and on. So what's the irony is that in certain meritocracies where, you know, all that matters is if you can knock somebody out, that's really where shit's going on. And these are macho, this is macho circles, these men who basically are animal savages, but they when a woman walks into that gym, a female fighter, and she may be really hot, I can promise you she's treated with the utmost respect, the utmost. She calls her own shots. So maybe that's kind of, that's an interesting microcosm, you know, to kind of look at. That seems to be the most unlikely place for women to rise to the top, and yet they have.
Right, and again, it's individuals. You know, you can't paint all women with the same brush, because those women, you know, maybe I have a lot more in common with them than I do, you know, with the work at home, like the stay-at-home mom type person. You know, so we are all different. It's not just men are from Mars and women are from Venus. It's like we're different people. So look at us as individuals. But also, I think that you're exactly right. The answer is thoughtfulness. The answer is thinking before speaking, before, you know, throwing wedges in and being divisive and using this, you know, it's like, wait a second, am I actually talking about this woman, this specific woman, or am I just saying all women suck, or all women are just there for my sexual objectification?
But the only thing, Claire, that I worry about is that would probably ring on a lot of deaf ears, because it's you're right.
Yes.
And it's you're correct. But I think that sometimes, going back to what Hunter always talks about, we've got to appeal to people's instinct, emotion, belief system. And so when you start speaking that way, and it's true, I know that what happens to a lot of young men is they go, I get that, but I'm already, yeah, whatever. And they're, you know, it doesn't, but whereas
right. I'm not saying that that's, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that you can just tell young men to start thinking more.
Right.
Like, that's, you have to figure out how to get them to go there.
Well, let me give you an example of what I mean. Yeah. Is so my thing is, when you listen to the Huffington Post or whoever it is talk about Trump, they speak in terms of, they're very insulting, right? And I understand that I'm not a fan of Trump's, but what they'll say is, and if you looked during the campaign, a lot of women and men on the left were talking about him and calling him a racist and a homophobe and a xenophobe and all those things. And those are very general concepts, and maybe in some context they're true and stuff. But why they fall into that fear is, I think something that would have been way more powerful is if you had said, well, Trump's not an American.
Right.
Trump believes in monarchy. Trump wants to be king. Mm-hmm. And Trump is...
Or he's a weakling who needed $1 million from his father, who needs to grab women's pussies to get laid.
Right. Feels like, powerful.
And he's
but we didn't do that.
I think people did say that. I think people said a lot of things. And because of that very, you know... extreme echo chamber that, you know, you are reading things from Alex Jones only. Like, that is the if you saw a post from Huffington Post,
artist,
you're not going to read it. Those the people on that side have, you know, this have a person that says exactly what they want to hear and are playing into every single one of their, you know, racist and bigoted emotions that they've ever had. So they're not hearing both sides of it. They're not hearing any sides of it except for Alex Jones or Breitbart. And
yeah, that might be the lunatic fringe too, right?
But also, also you're talking about an ecosystem of narratives, right? So there's a lot of different competing stories.
Right.
And so
I love Hunter who encapsulates it.
He's like,
an ecosystem of narratives. If you don't think I'm fucking stealing that the next time I have a
you should and that's what I want, Brian, is I want you to steal these ideas and I want you to be an idea bee that that cross-pollinates communities. Waggle that butt, do that waggle dance.
I've been doing it on stage and I've been doing it on my podcast.
This is new to now. This is new to now that the internet has created a place where you don't have to read the New York Times and understand everything, or you don't have to watch the four channels and hear Walter Cronkite tell you the news, because that's not it.
But there's an ecosystem of narratives, and the problem is that, as Brian says, right, there are narratives that would have been more effective if, for example, your goal was to discredit Trump, right, in terms of he needed his daddy's money, or, you know, he's such a loser that he needs to grab a pussy to get laid, or he's in the pocket of Russia, he's not a true American, he's a monarchist. But the problem is
which,
that...
Which, ironically, the you know, other Republican primary candidates were better at pulling out than the left was in the general election.
Yeah. But part of it is that you have what's happening is there's also an asymmetry in terms of the types of games that are being played and what the rules of engagement are. Yes. So there's how the sort of traditional liberal media operates, which is a lot of it is sort of around these intuitions of, you know, there is a respect for science and a respect for authority, and there are types of engagement that we allow ourselves to behave in. And then there's, you know, essentially ISIS, right? There's the Reddit, there's all these other forums where there are no rules, and everything is fair game. And so you're playing by two different rules of engagement.
Right.
And part of it is that I think that if you play out where is, you know, where does everybody having a microphone lead to? And it leads to the global village. It leads to a place where there are no rules. Anybody can tease.
Right.
And
the loudest voice wins.
That's right.
And the most delusional voice wins.
Well, not necessarily the most delusional voice, because I think part of it is that you need to... that's currently the way that things are working, right? Because it's very much the analogy that I use is what happened with dueling. Right. So you have a culture of dueling. It goes on. It fights to first blood. Now you introduce this new super technology of guns and fighting to first blood. Everybody just gets slaughtered and massacred.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the same way, social media has been introduced and our culture is not ready for it.
Right.
We don't have the intuitions.
Yeah.
And so there's a group of people who come in who are like not particularly invested in doing research, understanding what's going on, figuring out the truth. And they'll just say whatever for attention.
Well, they don't need to be, because currently that it's completely validated.
That's right.
Right. Everyone's but I want to bring this idea of delusion back into it, because the delusion of grandeur, the fact that, you know, the Alex Joneses of the world think that they are right about these conspiracy theories, about, you know, they've deluded them.
Or they're just making money.
Yeah.
But it's both of those things, because they've convinced, you know, it's like the L. Ron Hubbards, it's the, you know, writing
I think there are
right
a lot,
now
I think
about
there are
Norman
a lot.
Baker.
I'm not going to give Alex Jones that credit. I think he's a con man. And I think that he, and he's admitted to it. I mean, certainly in his divorce, he suddenly retracted this Pizzagate stuff. I guess he was being sued, or he won't tell you that, but that's my guess. And I guess being sued is more important than, if you really believe that there was a child sex ring, you could try to sue me as much as I would. I'd be trying to expose it. I'm not going to be scared by a lawsuit, but there must be some truth to that lawsuit.
Right. The snake oil salesman aspect of all of them is, you know, they're fucking snake oil salesmen.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
I was just going to say, I think it's important to understand too, like, we all have this tendency to believe in conspiracy theories. That's why we have what is it, Hanlon's razor, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like we have to have this rule where we can logically think that most things are because of stupidity, not because of malice. But people that want to make money can manipulate that feeling, right, that tendency that we all have. And so that's part of it. And then the other part is that the Dunbar number, I don't think we can realistically expect people to stop stereotyping. It's just not possible. Right. We just have to hold in our mind, our friend Spiro said, truncate and renormalize. And then you have to realize that, okay, I had this concept of the world and now it's being shattered in front of me and I have to be okay enough, open enough to let that go and let this new image come through. And so it's not necessarily that we want people to, I'm kind of back going in reverse what we were talking about earlier, but it's not that we want people to stop stereotyping. It's that it's like, okay, you stereotype, we all stereotype, and then just let it go when you can.
And now stop and think.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Did I just stereotype? Because if that's going to be your reaction, if that's going to be your gut instinct is like, that woman's a slut, she's got cleavage, you know, yeah, then, right, well, then you wait, no, why do I think that? Maybe she just, you know, has,
well, and
cleavage.
I think too, like if we can get,
I hate that word slut, just like sex.
Yeah.
We have to give all these different groups like, okay, this is the goal that we're all reaching for. You know, it's just like climate change. Like you can talk to a conservative about climate change without saying climate change. It's mm-hmm. like you want to defeat ISIS, this is how you do it. It's the same way with sexism or gender mm-hmm. bias or gender inequality. It's like you want to, do you care about the economy? Then you should care about decreasing the gender gap.
That's right.
Because that would raise our GDP.
That's right. Right. That's a much way, that's what I mean, is that to me is how you get people to change.
And
commerce is probably another way you get people to kind of let go of their sort of prejudicial beliefs. You know, if people are making money off each other, you get friendly.
Yeah. And I think right now what we're kind of going through is everybody has all these feelings that they are really tied to. They really don't want to let go of, myself included. Like when Hunter first told me about the plow story, I was just like,
what plow story?
Fuck that shit.
By the way, Kate's wearing a shirt that says "Pussy Grabs Back"
today. And I'm horrified.
Horrified and turned on at the same time.
It's part of my
not against it.
But no, I'm not against it. No.
My psychology.
I am sporting cleavage.
Claire, don't change a thing.
We've got the whole spectrum here.
Claire, you went to? Did you also go to Harvard?
No, Columbia.
Columbia, yeah.
Yeah.
Smart women, huh? Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy. Grab them by the mind, guys. Fuck off.
Exactly.
I just find it, more of a turn on. Keep going. Like physically.
So I'm not probably the best person to describe the plow theory, but prehistory, the plow was invented, and they think that maybe that's when the invention of, or when sexism became a thing. Because before that, it was more egalitarian. It was hunter-gathering. Everybody had, yeah, women weren't strong enough to do it.
It was two chicks, I guess. Am I right? Sorry.
And oxen, interchangeable.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. And so Hunter was like, okay, well, this is where sexism and this is a great story and stuff. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't like that. I just had all these feelings and I realized my feelings were, I don't want to let men off the hook that easy. Like, I have this very strong feeling of, like, no, fuck you. I don't want it to be that easy. But I also want a better society. So I'm going to have to, like, meditate and, like, get massages and, like, get rid of this anger somehow. Go to comedy.
I don't know about that. I was going to say, what about comedy? Like, I was going to ask you about comedy. Like, I'm joking around and I like to joke. But what do you think? First, where do you think that anger comes from? And also, you know, that it's a real feeling that you have. It's legitimate. So it's hard to kind of just let go of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily think I can get rid of it.
Where does it come from?
I think it comes from just like culture, trauma, just like a general feeling of I think everybody feels, especially white men too. Like, I think we all feel like we're not getting our fair share. And so we all feel that way. And I have my whole list of examples that I can point to and this, 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 and this. And I think that everybody has that. So I think we all have that feeling. And I think that's the problem right now. What's going on is people are angry and pissed, and we have to figure out a way to maybe not get rid of it, but neutralize it somehow.
Or how about, sorry, please.
No,
because I was going to ask you guys also, you know, with Serena Williams, Ilia Stasi, who was a great tennis player, said, I wonder what color the child's going to be, chocolate with a little milk. And then all of a sudden, he's a racist. And Serena Williams said, he was racist to me and my unborn child. I don't think so at all. I think he was just saying something at 70 years old. And he's like, sounds like it's going to be beautiful, chocolate with a little milk. I love milk chocolate personally. I don't think that's racist. I don't. Yeah. I don't think there's anything malicious about that, but he got fucking, I don't think he was even allowed to the tennis. So this is the world we're living in, where anger completely overshadows the humor involved, just off the cuff comments. Like that's hurting Serena.
Like the pendulum has certainly swung too far. And I don't think that you have to get rid of the anger, but I think no conversation happens if you don't recognize the anger.
Yeah.
Right. That's and at least try to neutralize it enough to have that conversation. I mean, that's really what.
Well, I think the other thing is, it's firstly, a lot of what's being talked about here is the fact that the human mind categorizes. So we create categories, right? That's the only way that we deal with this Dunbar number. And part of the problem is, what categories are we creating, and do those categories become rigid? So if we start to have this rigid line of, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, then that becomes hugely problematic. Because,
so not helpful.
Yeah, and who is Claire?
Yeah, exactly.
Claire is, you know, and this is why I like the phrase, every hero has 1,000 faces. So is Claire a woman? Yes, she's a woman. Is Claire have pale skin? Yes, Claire has pale skin. But Claire is also a writer. Claire is also a lover and a fighter and an intellectual and, you know, many
different
things.
It's true, though. You are all those. You have a lot of masculine energy, for lack of a better word.
Yes.
In a good way.
Yes.
You know?
And that's true.
No, it is about using that individuality where you can recognize it in your own life, just to convince yourself that the stereotype is not 100% across the board. Like, the plow story also made me furious when Hunter first brought it up to me and Kate. But because I had just read this book by Gail Collins that's really fabulous, where, you know, she sort of describes through all of these narratives and this kind of oral history of interviews that women in agricultural societies way back in the day actually felt more equality in the home, because as much as the guy was pushing the plow, none of the rest of the household then survives if she's not doing all the other chores. And that as
the plow story is bogus too, because,
but it's just in general, like, the reason it's infuriating is mostly just because of the personal things that have happened to me in my life. I don't know that those guys get to be let off for what they did based on the plow.
because of that.
But, like, also during the election, and, you know, it's about doing this to every group that you can, you know, making yourself aware that you stereotype in every group, and then also recognizing that for yourself with every individual, you know, because there was a video going down sort of in the days leading up to the election that I thought was really powerful, where this news anchor from somewhere in the South sort of went on the air and described growing up with his own father and how incredibly racist his father was when Jackie Robinson would be on TV, when, you know, anybody of any other color besides white was ever on television, just had the worst terminology for them, everything you can think of. And then whenever anyone referred to the one black family that lived in their neighborhood, he'd be like, oh, well, but they're nice. They're nice guys.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but even being able to say, okay, but I do know somebody who doesn't fit my stereotype, therefore maybe my stereotype doesn't apply. And it's the, you know, it's the same thing here.
But what about the idea that, look, I mean, the plow thing is bogus because the hunter-gatherer societies would go, it's still, like with Jared Diamond, they would go into other tribes and steal the women. We're going to go steal those guys. You know why? Because we can. That's how it operates. And so why does one country take the water from another country and take their land and take their women and take, you know, and make them speak their language? Because they can. And that was the case in Native American tribes. It was the case with the Samoan islands. They would go into other, I mean, when men have that ability, you know, there may be something to be said about the fact that not all men are that way, but all you need is a couple who are strong-minded, maybe sociopaths, maybe psychotics, who are very good at getting young men to do what they say with their charisma and their manipulation.
Much like what Brian Callen is good at.
That's exactly right. As my buddy Joe Janimore, who's a billionaire, said, if you weren't a nice guy, you'd be a great criminal. It's probably true. But that is, and frankly, I'm not to be. You're right. I mean, as a 50-year-old man now, I talk to a lot of young men. This podcast I have with 10 million downloads and counting. You know, I have a large. A lot of young men who come to my shows, and a lot of young men who, you know, I get bromance, you know, and I get it. I know what that was like. If I was a certain kind of guy in chaos, I am sure I could probably figure out a way, if I sat down for a little while, to come up with a cult of personality, a way of getting them to rally around certain truths and symbols and propaganda to motivate them to do some pretty crazy things, right? I just know how young men work.
You
speak that language.
You get Alex Jones in a heartbeat.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wonder if that maybe is a large sort of, maybe that's,
yes.
Because I think during war, it's always the psychos who come out and do the terrible things, right?
And I agree with you. And that's why I don't ever have anger towards men. Like the category of men, I'm not angry at. I never have been. Like you said, I have some masculine energy to me. I grew up watching weird movies like Gunga Din and Bo Jest and being like, oh, that would be amazing to join Foreign Legion and like go to war and hang out with, you know, a bunch of guys and do what I don't know why those things spoke to me, but they did. And I look at my movie collection now and it's like war film, boxing movie, you know, I am attracted to those films. But I never, like what you were saying, me personally, I was never angry at men. Like there were specific guys that pissed me off and that I got sexually harassed by, like this chef in a restaurant I worked in New York who was like, you know, why don't you come to Jersey with me and give me a massage and there'll be, you know, some money in it if you do a little bit more. And I was like, but I honestly, even then I was like, I'm like 19-year-old kid. I was like, I'm a waitress, not a prostitute.
And I'd be like, let me help you with your rent. Stop being a baby.
But even that, I'm just like, okay, yeah, he tried that, failed, and I'm out, you know.
Well, what do you think of like people like Bill O'Reilly and stuff? What was your take on that when you heard about that? I'm sure you've all had experiences.
Right? Well, yeah, we all have. I mean, I think that is something that I definitely join with females about, because we've all been sexually harassed. Like, I just sort of, you know, let it roll off my back for the most part, or I give it back to them. Or I just yell at them, and then they're like, oh, okay. Yeah,
so I had an experience recently with a friend of mine who worked for us on a TV show. And she's very, very attractive. And she was a Marine for 9 years. And I don't want to get too specific, but she had an interview at a company. And the men who are at that company, who are at the higher-ups, I know pretty well because I had worked with them. And she had an interview. She's eminently qualified. And the guy after the interview called her up and asked her out, and she really needed this job, but they didn't give her the job. They didn't say anything about that, but he called her up and asked her out. She wasn't attracted to him. No. She said no. Guess what? She didn't get the fucking job.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And you can't prove that sexual harassment, but that goes back to what I was saying about just being, you're being a shithead.
That's about
dick,
wielding
power
in a different way. Like, you know, in terms of the Bill O'Reilly thing, there also, the other thing that's sort of blowing up right now in the news is something, one of my best friends was one of the whistleblowers on, which is that this guy who's like one of the head people at the National Park Service, you know, like 6 or 7 women came out basically, you know, detailing this huge history of sexual harassment and like basically him taking advantage of his power to make the women in the workplace super uncomfortable, more flirtatious than is like, okay, whatever, you know. So all this stuff came out about 6 months ago. She was put on like, you know, leave and was supposed to work from home. And then today he had his like giant pension, big retirement ceremony that, you know, he's leaving because of this, these allegations, not allegations, they happened. And they give him this huge pension and this big retirement ceremony, and they call her and suggest that she work remotely today so she doesn't feel uncomfortable about the fact that everyone else in the office took him to play golf on his final day.
So what do you,
like, what are you supposed to feel?
But define for me what you would consider sexual harassment. Like in this case,
what, like, you, during the workday, asking for sexual favors when you say no, continuing to push.
Jesus.
Asking when you come in from riding your bike and you have to, like, ice something on your ankle that you, because you were bike riding to work. Does your daddy kiss your boo-boos? Can I kiss your boo-boos? And when you say no, thank you, it's like creepy. More of that. Well, why didn't your daddy kiss your boo-boos? Putting your head on someone's shoulder and stroking their hair during the workday. I mean, like, you know, there's flirting, God. And then there's like, a line has been drawn. Also, it's during work. Like, even in your friend's case, I feel like it's not that no one can ever ask out a coworker or someone that they've met in a professional situation. It's that they could wait until the job has been determined 2 days later,
or the before the tone,
putting someone in that position.
Or the tone, because that's a good example of the way I look at it is, I think, like, I love flirting, right? But I'm just going to use myself as an example. I think the way I flirt, I'm just going to use myself because I can't speak for anybody else. I love women. I think they're, but I think that when I flirt, and I've flirted in the workplace and, you know, all that, but I think the way I flirt is I always put myself in a position where I am sort of, I'm too weak. I'm sort of like, Jesus, you're a knockout, or something like that. There seems to be, isn't there a difference in sort of when that doesn't.
Well, it's also very clear as someone who has experienced the Brian Callen flirt. It's also, also very clear that there is not anything on the line of the response.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Like,
that's right.
Like that, like whether I'm like in the mood to play along today or kind of not, is not going to determine whether you or I then get to shoot a teaser again together, or whether, like,
kind of going, I'm complimenting you and enjoying the fact that I am on my heels, right?
Yeah, I think
there
that's
seems
what's
to be
important.
Something,
like,
different than.
And to be clear, Brian Callen flirts with literally
everything.
Everyone.
Yes.
Brian Callen flirts with me. If anybody ever wanted to file a sexual harassment suit against Brian Callen, it would be Brendan Shaw.
Yeah.
That's actually true.
Because
that's actually true.
Sometimes I'll just grab them, like, we were with these women and I could tell they liked him, and we were in Austin, and they were these young girls, and he's such a the women just want to breed with him. Their DNA goes, want to breed with that guy. He's just such a, he's 6'5", 250, a pro athlete and beautiful. And I just I kind of went, you know what, I'm tired of this bullshit, and I ripped his shirt open, and I go, go ahead, let me tender him up for you, and I started grabbing him and rubbing him down, and I held his arms and he goes, no, I go ahead, who wants to go first? So, yeah, the point is,
always know who is willing to play that game.
Yes.
Like, you're not.
I don't want to humiliate or embarrass anybody. And I don't want to bully anybody.
Well, right. You're not wielding power. I think that's where it all comes down to. I totally agree with Claire. Like, I love men. I work mostly with men most of the time. Like, all of it's fine. And then I know very specifically those instances when it's like using that power to put you in a position where you're kind of stuck.
Right.
Or like where you're clearly not getting an opportunity because of it. Like, the directing story that Hunter was referring to earlier was a director that Claire and I were working with. We created a show. She was signed on to direct, and she told us about a meeting she had where she went in and one of the networks was like hiring for this new big show, all their directors for the season. And she went into interview, had a great time, like, went gangbusters. Everybody loved her. It was all vibing. And then at the end of it, they were like, you know what? We totally loved you. You would get along so well with the showrunner, but we already have one female director this season.
Yeah.
And she was like, and? Like, and would you feel comfortable saying we already have one gay director, so we can't have two? She's like, do you have multiple male directors? Presumably, like, one is different from the next. Yes. And they were like, we have our one woman director. And that was it. It was had nothing to do with her talent or how the meeting went.
Guess how many, maybe you know, because your friend is one of them. Guess how many female directors have directed a movie over $100 million budget?
I think it's only one, and she's my friend Patty Jenkins. There may be a couple more, but I...
Four.
There are four.
But she's one of them, yeah.
She is one,
And that's insane.
Or it's an action, or it's that a lot of women don't are not as interested in action movies, you know, sort of those big blow up special effects movies.
Do you know,
as
how four movie, know, do you know what the four movies are?
That Wonder have... Woman. Mm-hmm. If I think about it, I probably could get it, but tell me.
A Wrinkle in Time.
Didn't know that.
K-9.
I didn't know that. I never heard of these movies.
Mm. And then.
It is?
Widowmaker. No. Sorry. Is it K-19? I might have it. K-19 Widowmaker. It's Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah.
Ava DuVernay. Bigelow is amazing. Is Wrinkle in Time.
Is this a new? Is this K-9? Is this?
No. It's from 2002. Oh, okay. K-19. Yeah. I have to say it because I messed it up. And then the other one is Nikki Caro. It's another Disney movie. Mm. Oh, it's Mulan. So two Disney movies.
Yeah.
So it's not just action movies.
Mm. And also the bigger thing being that, like, you can't know. It's a convenient narrative to say, well, women just don't want to, you know, or aren't creatively drawn to action movies. But you have no idea how many meetings they took with women where they were like, nah.
Right, and Catherine
would be right for our movie.
Catherine Bigelow specifically does direct action movies. I know. Yeah. She's
Catherine
amazing.
Bigelow is one of the best directors out there. Point Break. Yeah. You know, I mean, Hurt Locker.
Yes, Hurt Locker is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I worked with Nikki Caro. She's also amazing. And I worked with her on North Country. But she did Whale Rider, and you know, like,
oh, I love that movie.
Yeah.
The movie. Oh, look, women can tell stories.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that. Can. That's not a question.
I think it's more the fear that they can't handle the money.
Mm. Well, also,
sorry, and maybe the authority.
Well,
I think the other thing, can we just throw this in to consider as we're talking about female directors? How many shitty movies do male directors pull out?
Yes.
It's not like if men were batting it's not like sports, right? Like, you know, if men were batting 1,000 on directing movies and it was just like, oh my God, Hollywood is just killing it. Why mess with success? Right?
Right.
But there are just so many bad movies that, like, I think you can feel pretty comfortable messing up the formula.
You're going to see more women, though, because Hollywood is more and more. Being, you know, I mean,
yeah,
more
no,
women.
they're
a trend right now, and it's moving in the right
they're
direction.
They're taking them to task.
And
yeah,
there was a federal
sure.
investigation.
Yes,
that
which helps.
but also, just as a reminder, too, like this is not just men doing this. I mean,
right. No, there was a woman in the meeting
to other women
that the director we know, like there was a woman in the room, and then she was like. It took everything I had not to like call that woman up and be like, do you see what you're doing?
Yeah.
Like, you
know, right. And having worked on North Country, I can tell you exactly what happened on that movie and why it didn't make as much money as everybody was hoping it would. And it was poorly marketed. It was written by a dude, like the script. And I think that there were some script issues with it, but it had nothing whatsoever to do with Nikki Caro or her directing style because she was badass director. It had more to do with what the company then did with that movie, but because she was
always get blamed.
Yeah,
you get
she
put,
got
you
blamed,
get put in movie
and she got
woman,
panned, you know? And wasn't working in this city. I mean, in Hollywood at all until a few years ago. Or now she has like Zookeeper's Wife.
Dare I say that Hollywood is not a place we have to worry about when it comes to racism or sexism. In to the measure that we have to worry about it in other fields, Hollywood bends over backward to prove that they are not sexist and racist.
That's not true.
So do you really think that Moonlight deserved
the
fucking Oscar
year,
this year?
Yes, I mean, actually, but also
good
like
God.
Separately in
come on,
this is
Katie.
only in the last 2 to maybe 4 years, if we're being generous, that
it's
any of that push.
It's just not fair.
But why do you feel like you're being attacked?
Julia Roberts was making $20 million long before. I mean, I'm sorry, but the marketplace in Hollywood is what decides what's good. I'm not saying that men don't run Hollywood. They have for a long time.
Yes.
And so men are going to choose what they're comfortable with. I mean, I work on a sitcom where I've worked on enough sitcoms where all of them are men. It's a certain type of men at a certain age. I get it. There's one token female writer. I totally get what you're saying.
And in front of the camera as well, like the majority of my friends who are also actresses who auditioned this pilot season, the number one thing that was consistent across all of their reports is that they were just dying for any audition that wasn't for a wife, girlfriend, or mom. of a dude.
Right. Like, well, right. And the Bechdel test, the Bechdel test has, there isn't a male equivalent of that.
Right.
So yeah. It's not like a bunch of dudes standing around are all talking about their women in their lives all the time. They aren't.
I just think that Hollywood, it, you know, I mean, this is not lost on, I actually think that has less to do with sexism and racism, and it has more to do with familiarity, has more to do with kind of like people being afraid. There's a lot of money on the line, going with what they know, what they're familiar with, an entrenched power structure that happened a long time ago, and sort of momentum.
I think
that's
Brian,
changed.
I don't know why you don't categorize that as sexism, though.
Well,
I don't think it's fair to the people that.
To the men in power.
I don't think that they're sexist. I don't. I mean, sexist. As in, they believe that women are dumber or not as capable.
What if we just call it gender bias?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just think Hollywood really does a good job to try to represent.
Interestingly,
women and people of color, and they did a great job at the Oscars, and to the point where it was a little embarrassing because I didn't quite. Believe them.
I'm just saying interestingly, that pendulum swing is incredibly new.
Well, I think there's also, you know, a big difference between what they would call virtue signaling, where there's a lot of sort of demonstrative sort of Potemkin villaging that goes on about diversity and how inclusive we are and all that sort of stuff.
But behind the scenes opportunity what is really going does not on. Reflect
and
that. Yeah.
No, but because wait, hold on. Because but behind the scenes is dollars and cents. I mean, you know, it's a meritocracy. Look, I mean, the majority of people that are paying your bills are boys in their teens.
Well, and part of
so
Patty
Hollywood's
Jenkins.
Make, it's actually, I know it's not true anymore, but it is still true. And so what happens is you're dealing with the economics.
No.
It is. The economics are that we have to make movies. Our bottom line is the studios. We're responsible to our shareholders. These are the movies that seem to test the highest, that make the most money. And a lot of times they are with a strong male character with lots of guns and shooting. I would point you guys to the fate of the Fast and the Furious. I didn't see the movie, but goddamn, could you get more macho with fast cars and guns? I mean, I watched the preview. I was like, what a fucking nightmare. I couldn't even watch it, but it made how much money and who was going to see that? Guys who brought their girls.
Well, and also, you know? Crucially, where did it make money? A lot
overseas?
Of the market is overseas. So there's a big difference between what's playing in an American market and what's playing in an international market.
Yeah.
And a lot of those, you know, cultural intuitions that we've talked about, like what do Russians like? What do Southeast Asians resonate with? What do Latin cultures resonate with? It's a lot of those old intuitions. So there is a demand in a market for that, to Brian's point, because we have to remember always this is the caliphate. And the most important category is the Emperor Callan, and that he's never entirely wrong. Sometimes he makes pronouncements that need to be interpreted by his vizier so that people can understand the wisdom that he's providing. So I think the point is that there are international markets where maybe some of this more traditional, in inverted commas, what we're trying to oppose does make sense. But at the same time, I think that a lot of it is also that there's an assumption about what the market wants and who can deliver what the market wants.
Right.
And the point is that the reason why Catherine Bigelow and people like that are so important is because they defy those categories and they show us, hey, women actually do a great job of directing action. And we're all very excited in the caliphate for Wonder Woman because Patty Jenkins is going to really show again how well women can direct action. So just remember, Brian wasn't wrong. He may have been misunderstood and it may have sounded like fast thinking, but it was fast thinking born of a lot of slow thinking and really careful study. there was so much of that, that when it then came out fast, we were just dazzled by the level of revelation that was happening.
Talking about Hunter. Thank you, Hunter. God damn it. I was getting water the whole time.
That was a good vamp.
I just wanted to backtrack a little bit, but that was well put. That, like, in the early 1930s, the majority of films that Hollywood made had strong female protagonists. I mean, this was what I wrote my senior thesis on in school, because I was a film major, so I get to watch a lot of movies and then write about them.
Columbia.
But, yeah.
Yes. University of Columbia.
The drug dealing IV.
I'd love to do a whole fantasy of being your teacher, and I'm from Spain for no reason. I like your film very much. That's a bad accent.
You know, but you had people like Norma Shearer who would play, you know, strong females. Like in The Divorcee, she gets mad at her husband for cheating on her, goes and cheats on him right back to like serve him the same medicine that she had, and then he divorces her, and that's it. And it's all about the double standard, and it made a bunch of money for the time. And there were countless stories of this kind, and you know, screenwriters like Anita Loos would be making these screenplays, and like the fact that right now we've returned to what they used to call the cinema of attractions, which is just explosion, explosion, explosion. It's like a fireworks show. And, you know, I feel like we eventually will return to this era of like more storytelling and more personal stories that people will be attracted to.
It might be on TV
to.
Now, right?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that there was a time from 1930 until 1934 where the majority of films had female protagonists.
Who are like openly sexual, like yes. Very aggressive, like the whole, you know.
Right, and you know, we're multi-dimensional, like we're three-dimensional yeah. characters. And so this was a fascinating time period, and what happened was that the church... The Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, both of them got together and said, no, we can't have this. We can't have females having a sex drive. It wasn't even about how risque everything was. I mean, sure, you saw people, you know, women in their slips, but it was more about the content and the, yeah. So they quashed that. They hired this guy who with a red pen went through and took everything out. Like it wasn't Will Hayes, it was Joseph Green, but just took out all of the strong female, you know, if
any
you had
of empowerment,
if you had like, a prostitute with a heart of gold, you had to kill her at the end of the movie.
Jesus. But yeah. Don't you think it's back? Don't you think that women are powerful and sexy in their awesome outfits?
I don't think so. I think
Beyonce,
it's I feel like it has maybe in real life, yes, there are the Beyoncés, but I'm talking about specifically in films, they've embodied action heroes instead of being, you know, heroines in their own world, in their own right. They're just like
I don't think so.
Dressed up.
Really? You think so?
Like, like the men action heroes.
I don't know if that's the case.
Is
that true?
I didn't see Ghost in the Shell, but it seems like she just is mostly naked and... I don't know what she does.
Well, I think that, you know, when you see those, the argument has been made, there have been articles about this and stuff, that, you know, the most empowered women that are often used as the example right now for like, oh, look at all these strong female characters are not real women. Yeah. They're not people. They're Wonder Woman, they're Ghost in the Shell, you know, like, which is awesome. And it's great to watch a badass lady kick some ass on screen. That's great. But in terms of stories about just like actual women who are just heroic or strong or intelligent or whatever they are, it doesn't
I don't think that's
feel
true.
Like they're equal stories.
I don't think
what movie do you want to reference?
I think that most movies that I see, the writers and directors go out of the, they're not lost on that. They go out of their way to try to do something unconventional.
Well, give me an example.
Yeah. Like name a movie from the last couple of years.
I don't think it's necessarily on purpose.
I can't.
But
I can't. It's not. I'm trying to think what movies I've seen.
I know. Even if you look at Moonlight, the mother character is the worst character in that film.
Yeah, but
and I loved Moonlight. Moonlight. That was a great movie. But the you know it's men, and men helping other men, and then. The mother is an addict and terrible.
That exists in real life.
Yeah, it totally exists in real life. But I'm just like, what is your example?
I just think stories write themselves, right? Stories. Look, I mean, if women want to be represented more in Hollywood, then doesn't the responsibility ultimately lie on them coming up with great stories that are undeniable?
It's too bad that no women writers have done that.
But Brian,
how can you argue that no women are coming up with good stories if it's also then on many of the men who own the networks and studios to purchase said story and
make it? But
like can we not assume probably those are out there but don't come to light?
I don't know. I don't know the answer, and I'm willing to grant that you're right to an extent on that. But
and I think specifically films. I mean, there are television shows now that further ahead, you know, are specifically targeting a demographic of females and, you know, bringing a different perspective on femininity. Like Broad City is great. You know, it's that kind of stuff you don't see in film very often.
But, you know, we're also, like, film is difficult to talk about in that terms because we're always looking for flawed characters and people who are broken and full of conflict. So I don't know that film is the right medium to, and certainly don't think in any way that it's a writer or director's responsibility to portray a male or female in any light other than whatever their truth is, their creative truth is. I mean, the idea that there should ever be this idea that Hollywood and Gina Davis has this terrible, terrible app or whatever it is that they're they're trying to figure, they have this, like, sort of, they give films a grade on how long do you show a female or transgender or minority in a position of power saying something powerful. I hate that so much because as if that's a filmmaker's responsibility, a writer's responsibility, an artist's responsibility. Fuck that. I don't have a responsibility to anybody. I can only write what's true to me. As a stand-up comic, I'm working on the script that's ruining my life, but I don't have a choice here. I'm only writing what my inner truth is. Is it clouded by prejudice and fear and things that are maybe not so admirable? Of course.
You should. That is how you should write. As a writer, that's how I feel, is like what serves the story is what should go into the story. Yeah. But who's that, you know, ultimately somebody, the buyers presumably, are responsible for making sure that somebody who can tell that story about a real female or transgender or whatever character, flawed or not flawed or heroic or whatever, but a person,
they get screen time.
Gets time. Yeah, why? Get space.
They say
that again. Yeah. I'm sorry. So you're saying?
I'm saying that within your individual story, what you want to write, the characters that best serve that story, that is what you should be writing.
Yeah.
And what I want to have in my story should be what I write, and all of that is fair. But at some point, not all of those different voices make it to the general public.
Yeah.
And so it does, there is a barrier to getting, because if most of the stories that we see end up still being written by people who live in the same cultural sphere as you do.
Well, that's most of the population, right? Isn't it?
White men?
How many people are actually transgender, right? So in other words,
white men versus women or minorities.
Women are 51% of the population.
What I'm saying is that last I checked, there are a lot of women in movies as well. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying that women shouldn't have. See, I worry when we talk this way, because what we're really saying, it seems, Katie, is when you say that, is that the powers that be somehow should be giving sort of, where are all the movies about transgender people? Where are all the movies about women? Well, the problem with that is that this is a business, right? And so they're going to go with what makes the most money. And they're also going to go with the best story.
There are plenty of Adam Sandler flops that prove that maybe someone else could be given a chance.
But sure, and that's probably why women are being given a chance. I mean, I don't even think it's altruistic. I think it's like they're going, you know, like Hunter was saying, and you know, it's like there have been a lot of failures by men.
I don't think it should be through altruism. Yeah. I think it should be like, why don't we see if maybe telling the story of a different kind of person makes us a little more. Yeah,
but it requires making. I think that's the key.
But we are. Look at Reese Witherspoon and her company and all these women who are coming up with their own production companies and making movies for women and by women. I mean, what about Jodie Foster and Reese Witherspoon and all these? These Hollywood, again,
it's still a tiny
percentage. But it's growing. I mean, this is Hollywood's not where we need to worry about sexism, is it, guys?
Yes, it is. But also, as soon as you give that the demographic that is 51%, we've just gotten so used to going to see, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy, like all of these movies that exist that are, you know, and I love Guardians. Guardians is a great movie. And Karen Gillan is great in it, but, and everybody else is great in it. But you present them with, like, in the early 1930s, when there were a lot of, you know, strong female protagonists, women were going to the movies more. They did. They went to the movies more because they related to the people on screen. The only thing that I saw La La Land and I was finally like, why do I like this movie so? Oh, I relate to Emma Stone. Like, I there's a person.
I was gonna say La La Land,
that's like
but I
a
didn't
three-dimensional person that is a woman that I'm like, oh, I get her and I understand her foibles and all of that stuff.
Exactly. And can I tell you specifically why we need to care about sexism in Hollywood? Because stories change culture.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct.
And so if we want to change the culture of sexism, mm-hmm. we need to do it by telling better stories.
Better stories.
That's a good point.
Will and Grace. Will and Grace is a great example.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have the chance to meet people in your own bubble of your life that are different from you, that have different experiences, that is how you meet
well,
them.
Well, that's a very, you make also, a very good point about story because, you know, I read this article in the New York Times about why read great novels, because it'll allow you to understand what it's like to be a crippled veteran, a woman, an Asian fat mill worker, you know.
And also, I mean, the great irony is how did Kate Fogarty and I meet? Well, we met at Second City, and specifically because I was talking about, like, this is the sort of the big irony of Trump, is that, you know, Hollywood is very liberal. It's very pissed off at Trump. And then they're like, what can we do? And then they say, let's go march. Like, it's the 1960s. And it's like,
let's
guys,
have sit-ins. It's like,
you control media.
You're
the best
storytelling
on the planet. If you want to beat Trump, how did Trump win? Trump won on Twitter. He won on social media. It's because he told a clearer story than Hillary Clinton did. So you have to out-storytell him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the thing is that Hollywood has all of this storytelling talent. You know, Brian Callen has all the answers to the world. Make more Brian Callen vehicles,
right.
And suddenly you'll find that the
Thank
world
you.
Will change.
Thanks, guys. I'm a super fair actor.
but it does come down to, I mean, that's the key thing is that, you know, for example, there are stories that are told about Claire, right? That Claire is, you know, a goddess who, you know, arose out of the sea on a clamshell. And that's just
that
one
happened.
Story right. about Claire.
No, that's the truth.
No, that
story.
Is the true story.
There are no alternative facts.
Yeah,
there
are.
She's from the sea. She belongs to Poseidon, everyone.
Yeah.
Where's my pitchfork? I don't know why Poseidon speaks this way. But he's rather posh.
It's because of the Navy. Poseidon was in the Navy.
I have barnacles again. Get these off my back. They're unsightly.
And then Katie dressed me.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was necessary. These shells will not do for a meeting. Come on, let's go.
But the way you disrupt stories is by telling other stories. And Brian, this goes back to your favorite quote from Amos Oz, which is that if you want to beat a bad idea, you have to come up with a better idea.
Yeah.
And so there are bad stories that are being told in the caliphate, because all of the world is the caliphate. You're in charge of it all. And, you know, there are bad stories that are being told about some of your people, these rigid narratives about women, or these rigid narratives about black people, or these rigid narratives about gay people, or, you know, and then what happens is that people end up then telling stories back. So some women get so angry that they start to tell stories about all men. And the women at this table are not the ones who are telling these stories, but the ecosystem of narratives that you are responsible for, Brian, right, is that you have to make sure that better stories are told.
Then let me say this.
Yeah.
It is on those that feel they are underrepresented to change that. I'm not going to change it for them because I can't, because I don't know how. But if women want better stories told about women, if transgender people want better stories told about them, if people of color want better stories told about them, then they had better figure out a way to do it. Just like, because I ain't doing it for them, because I can't, I don't know how, and even if I tried, I'd be criticized for it. So,
But Brian, hold on.
Okay. So in my opinion, anytime you see that gender gap closing, it's because the people that wanted it to close did it by themselves. And I'll go back to the mixed martial arts again, the UFC. I mean, and Strikeforce. You know, Ronda Rousey spent, you know, her whole life on a judo mat. And I can keep going with all the names. Chris Cyborg, I mean, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, sorry, I always forget her name, but there's so many women. those women came up in Russia and in Poland, some of the most macho societies in the world, and literally punched and wrestled their way to the top. And that is where I think, to me, where, you know, it's gotta come from those people first.
Right, well, but it also has to come from the people that are giving them the opportunities to do that.
There's Ronda Rousey doing her training, mm-hmm. and then there's the guy at the network who decides to finally air that fight, well, right. put it on primetime, and market it.
Dana White himself said the women will never fight in the UFC, and then he had his mind changed.
Yes, right, without the Harrison Ford character in the Jackie Robinson movie, whose real name is whatever, you know, without him, Jackie Robinson wouldn't right. have the opportunity.
And so the point is to recognize the people who have put in the work and are trying to make that change, and to not react by resisting and feeling uncomfortable, but rather saying, okay, let's try it. Let's give it a shot.
Just to suggest something here, rather than, you know, we've been talking a lot about the word responsibility, right? Which tends to set people off, but there's also the word opportunity, right? And what you're hearing, I think, potentially here is that this 51% is saying, we want this. This is the mm-hmm. thing that we want. We will pay money for this. And there's the possibility for the people who are willing to be the bridge and who are willing to have idea sex can innovate and develop better and better products that really can find a market. So, you know, obviously people like Reese Witherspoon, like you mentioned, and Jodie Foster see that opportunity. Patty Jenkins sees that opportunity. But also there's a real opportunity for in this, you know, ecosystem of men within Hollywood, if you want to be the guys who are like really reaching out and figuring out, okay, what are the products that are really going to sell to this huge, untapped, underutilized market, then there's lots of money there for you as
well. Look at Amy Schumer with yeah. Trainwreck. You know, Judd Apatow, she wrote that script with Judd Apatow, and it was a huge hit.
Yep, or Bridesmaids.
There you go.
Which mm-hmm. Bridesmaids was yes, hilarious.
Yes, but thanks in part, like, and absolutely, I'm such fans of all of those ladies, but Judd Apatow and Paul Feig are helped that happen, you know?
There are a lot of guys like that who are...
It's not solely our responsibility
to someone helps make it happen.
Yeah. Break down that door because, you know, we need somebody also willing to open the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that what they're doing is, Brian, is the people of the Caliphate want you to be one of those people. They want you to bestride those two worlds, like the Colossus.
I want you to bestride a lot of things. Brian.
Oh, yeah. Hey.
Harass me. Harass me.
Here it comes.
Sexual Please. Harassment right back at you.
Threaten my job.
I could tell that you were okay with it.
God, am I ever?
I think
threaten my job. You mean I have to do this for that? All right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, blast you. You're so oppressive or suppressive.
I mean, think about that, Brian, as the man who, you know, breaks down the doors of sexism and shatters the glass ceiling, and there's just a lot of women who are cheering you on as God, you do
just
it.
Just asking you to bestride them.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Well, yes. You know, but I mean, that is
open
where
our
I
doors.
Believe in inspiration. I
yeah,
think, right. Inspiration is. I think that there is a lot to be said about if you thought that your efforts were never going to bear fruit because there was a system in your way. So there are a lot of women that grow up in societies where no matter what they do, they're really never going to be able to realize their potential, their curiosity, and contribute the way they could.
Malala.
Yeah.
Malala Yousafzai?
Yeah. So maybe the job of the power structure is to at least, and I think they have for the most part. But
well, Brian, you have.
But let's just say, I just think that the idea would be, you know, it makes sense for all of us, for all of our pocketbooks and all of our well-being in a stronger country if we provide that opportunity and that young people can see that. And I think people like my daughter do see it. And there's nothing in my daughter's brain that would suggest that she's not going to be exactly what she wants to be. And I think most young people.
That's because she's nine, Brian.
Sort of, but sort of not, and sort of, sort of not right now because Trump is in office. Because I tutor a 12-year-old, and she made a pronouncement. She's like, I felt so much better when Obama was president as a girl. And, you know, it was just, you know, and Lulu,
you're like, Lulu.
She's like, I just, you know, I felt safer and I felt like I mattered. And now, you know, because she's hearing all of this stuff about grab him by the pussy and, you know, just his just general sexism, she doesn't feel as powerful as she used to. And that's sad. That's really sad. You know, I try to impart, I'm like, no, Lulu, you still can do anything and everything. Don't worry, you know, and we'll get Trump out before you get to do that. But, you know, just the fact that there is somebody who is degrading towards women in the White House is
or
awful.
Some people didn't take it that seriously, you know, including a lot of women, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting to me. I talk to a lot of women, especially older women, who are like, eh, you know, like they were like, yeah, he was talking like a guy.
Right.
And I was like, wow, it's interesting. They were like, yeah, you know, I mean, I do think that there are a lot of guys
but to
that
a
talk,
young, impressionable mind, yeah, like a child, yeah, that isn't,
it's kinda rough.
You that, know.
It's easy well, to say that when
and that's all over the news.
Yeah.
And I think that's also has to do with culture, too. Like, if you're more honor culture, you might just be more okay with that, or you're more loyal to your group and their
flaws. Or he reminds
you
of your uncle or your dad, or you know what I mean? So you know,
that's sad.
You know that.
Or it's not
sad. No, it may not be sad. It may also be that they don't find that as much of a threat because he might have been speaking in a tongue-in-cheek way or in a way that, you know, people say things, right? You know, people say a lot of shit like and they don't mean
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
I
feel right, like
but
he
it's
meant
about,
it. But
it's about respect. And Obama never disrespected women. Like, that was just not a thing
well,
on his, you know,
my
radar.
Best friend, who is conservative, would totally disagree because she felt disrespected by Obama. But that's kind of my point.
Because she was a conservative
as
or
a
because
woman,
she was
as
a
woman.
Woman?
She specifically points to, I mean, she's not here to speak for herself, but she specifically points to a statement he made when he was asked about Sarah Palin. And he said, I'm sure she's a good mother. And to her as a working mother, that was such a fuck you.
Gee, people are so sensitive.
But like, but I think that's part of the point is that women, we're not all the Borg. We're not all hooked up to the same brain. We all have different cultures. So there's some women that their culture, Trump isn't as big of a deal to them.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But to bring this, oh.
Well, I was just. The thing I was also going to throw in about the whole Trump thing, where I have a slightly different perspective, because, you know, Trump is from New York. New York culture is very Dutch.
Always bringing it back
yeah,
to being
Dutch.
Dutch.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
But I listen to the sort of things that Trump is saying, and these are the sorts of things. Like, there is that sort of Germanic Dutch thing. They're much more open about their sexuality, and they say all sorts of different things. And it's very, to, you know, sort of Anglo culture, it is very blunt and crass and all of that. But it may not have necessarily, I don't know. I don't know how he meant it. And this is not to.
Well, I also know those people in New York. That's the exact same culture
yeah,
that
yeah,
where
exactly.
I got sexually
right.
harassed and where
yeah.
he
yeah.
just said, come to Jersey with me, give me a massage and have sex with me,
yeah,
basically,
right.
and I'll pay you. I was like, wait,
you're,
what
you're allowed
of
to be,
this
you're,
waitress
you're allowed,
outfit
yeah, you're
says
allowed to
that
be
I'm a prostitute.
You're allowed yeah. as a woman or anybody to be offended
yes.
by that. That's fucking.
Well,
like,
I told
you're
the
allowed
plow
to be like,
story.
Jesus.
I told anyway, so now the plow story, now the Trump is Dutch thing, now I'm just in trouble and I'm excited for the blowback on Twitter. It's going to be really
exciting. I know a lot of macho guys who, when they heard that, they all yeah. of them, I mean, guys who are like, you know, big kind of macho athletes and stuff, and they're all like, I don't say that shit. Like, I wouldn't
yeah, exactly.
do that to a woman.
Right.
Like, that's, I'm not going to grab it. What the fuck
yeah.
are you talking
and,
about?
And, yeah. and
no, like, get yeah. out of our group, bro.
Say that in the locker room.
Okay.
What?
Yeah. So now I'm in trouble. But the,
but he might have been speaking. I know what you mean.
All I'm saying is I wouldn't have said that, right? Yeah. But the point is that just to build off of Kate's point, that very often, you know, there are things that are permissible in a certain cultural environment, which then yeah. taken out of that cultural
yes.
context, come to suddenly have a whole new resonance and a
yes.
whole new meaning.
Yes.
And the challenge is, in a global sense, that we have this mess of cultures that we're now dealing with, mm-hmm. and we now have to figure out what is a culture that, and I think this goes to Katie's point, so much of what this comes down to is power. Right.
Yes.
And where power is
really
power
weird.
And
yeah.
respect, though,
yeah.
like, you know, that is one of the most disrespectful things that you can do to a person, to anyone. Like, if you grabbed a guy by the balls
or his pussy
or his pussy.
Pussy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In
pussy.
In Brian Callen's case. It's disrespectful, and that's what we heard as well. That's what I heard as a woman.
It's also context, though. I mean, I always marvel at, you can go to Mykonos and everybody's naked on the sand. Somehow it's fine to be completely naked with strangers and have a conversation with them, and then
you could have a respectful conversation.
Yeah, I know.
We've been, guys, it's been an hour and a half and counting, so I think more than that.
And we didn't even get to talk about geniuses, Brian.
I know.
Still so much to unpack.
We won't get into that. We should do this again, though. This is fun.
Well, I think that's the thing. Was it fun? I had fun.
Oh, yeah.
I think,
love this stuff.
I think a lot of people, like Hunter and I, had a failed sexism conversation, and I think it's because we were internalizing that fear of talking about this. It's like, it doesn't have to be so scary. It doesn't have to be so emotionally fraught, and we can disagree and we can all be friends at the
end.
We
don't have to solve anything.
No.
You know, that's the other thing. That
but
it's like,
yeah, but this is allowing people to think about what that even means. And that's the first step. Like, you need to think about it and talk about it in order to recognize it. And, oh yeah, maybe that does go on. Oh, that person's story. Oh, that person's story. Yeah.
And in this kind of format where, you know, on Facebook, the best way to get a lot of eyeballs is to say the most extreme thing in one direction or the other. On Twitter, same thing. You know, so to actually sit down and have a conversation for this long.
Well, what I got out of it was just, you know, also the idea that where I was talking about not being safe to be a man, kind of, you know, you going, oh, I can't imagine.
Right. Do you feel safe, Brett?
I don't feel safe.
We're going to attack you later. We're going to gang
cry.
Up.
Okay, yeah. That's
but
good,
But only after you guys harass me some more. Or is it harass? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Hunter Motz for putting this together. Kate Fogarty, who's a newcomer to this group and a mixed mental artist. And, Claire Fogarty. And Katie. Garrity.
We're all the same to you.
Her voice reminds me of John Fogarty.
One big woman.
Yeah. It ain't me. I'm
one big woman who's attacking you constantly.
Claire Garrity.
The attack of the 50-foot woman. That's life.
That's it. All right, guys. I have a kung fu class I have to get to. That's not true. I would never do kung fu. It doesn't work, but I box. This has been another...
No, Katie Locke O'Brien.
Katie
you
Locke
missed
O'Brien. I said Katie O'Brien, didn't I?
Nope.
Katie, I'm sorry.
I just feel like you're asserting that power over me.
It is.
Okay.
I want to apologize for my natural dominance, everybody. And if you're feeling attracted and drawn to it, and it bucks against all your feminist principles, I understand. And so does America. This has been another episode of Mixed Mental Arts. Ta-ta.